This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Matt and Brett, already a busy day. News coming down that there will not be charges against the officers in the shooting of Winston Boogie Smith. I'll get to that here in just a little bit. Brett is joining us. Brett, did you have a nice weekend? Was it okay for you?
Yeah, great weekend up until I just heard that news.
I
know you'll get into that later, but my goodness.
Yeah, it's a decision by a Crow Wing County judge on that. A lot of details to get in there. I will get to that here in a little bit. But right now, it is Indigenous Peoples Day in the United States of America. Ogama Gnu Ikwe is the exceptional news person for, of course, the Native Roots Radio, I Am Awake. It's on in the 6 o'clock hour right after this show. If you're not listening to it, you're wrong. Ogama is currently out in Washington, D.C. With the protest out there. She's kind enough to take some time before her show to talk about Indigenous Peoples Day. Ogama, how are you?
You know, I am having an interesting day. I'm currently on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, and I'm having mixed feelings right now on Indigenous Peoples Day at the National Capitol. It's been a very interesting morning.
Well, so, let's describe the scene here. I mean, how many people are out there for Indigenous Peoples Day?
Well, right now, nobody. It's just tourists. The Indigenous Peoples Day rally that took place today was actually in front of the White House at about 9 a.m. Eastern time is about when it started in front of the White House, but we left from Freedom Plaza at about 8. Mm-hmm. And there was several hundred people in attendance from all over the country, not just Indigenous peoples, but environmental leaders as well. BIPOC people, BIPOC leaders who are concerned about the climate crisis came from Alaska, from Florida, from Texas, from the southern bayous, from the East Coast, where they're putting in the Mountain Valley Pipeline from Line 3, from Line 5 in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. So there was a lot of people in attendance today, this morning at the White House, but this afternoon we've been able to kind of take off and visit and see a few of the sites. I've never been here before personally.
It is quite magnificent in the sense being as a place like a plaza with memorials on it. There's a lot of interesting things to see there. But as you said, you're on the Lincoln Memorial, and for Native Americans, I mean, once again, it's perspective. White America has a tendency of looking at Lincoln and seeing the guy that saved the Union from slavery in the Civil War. Native Americans, the view of Lincoln is very different because obviously of the way that it was handled the Native Americans and how of course they were rounded up, put into concentration camps, hung in mass, largest hanging I believe on U.S. territory by the government, and that was all under Lincoln, and his legacy with the Native Americans was pretty atrocious.
Yeah, and, you know, just as a Native person or person of color here for this event and here, you know, on behalf of the environment and seeing, you know, the reflecting pool on the National Monument right now is actually pretty low. And, you know, we're driving through the city and you're right, it's beautiful here. It's magnificent. There's monuments everywhere and those kinds of things. But it's like, I know who built these monuments. Mm-hmm. And I know what the men who are part of these monuments stood for. And then on top of it, you know, there's all these really beautiful, very, very high end, I guess, you know, kind of exasperating this idea of wealth. And yet all around you, you know, I seen a homeless encampment today, you know, just down the block from a Tiffany's jewelry store, where really wealthy people are walking in and out. And even here on the National Mall, there's people, out here, you know, with coolers, you know, offering, bottles of water and Gatorade, you know, that are unlicensed, and there's signs telling you not to buy from them. So it's this whole juxtaposition of, you know, wealth and poverty and who's important and why those things are important. So I'm seeing a lot of that here, which I can't say I'm surprised to be seeing. I kind of had to mentally prepare myself for this. I didn't know how I was going to react to it, but I think I'm probably reacting about as well as I expected to.
Well, and what you do is you're bringing in the what you're seeing here is the myth. I mean, it's we as a country have built these great Eurocentric, white male, wealthy white male centric stories, which kind of are based on, you know, flimsy, you know, ness at best, and want to completely ignore the negatives there. I mean, it's kind of the concept of it's Indigenous Peoples Day. I don't consider it Columbus Day. And I grew up in Rhode Island, which was a lot of Italians. And I mean, the Italians loved Columbus Day because they felt it was an Italian American day. But the reality is that you can have an Italian American day. You can just leave Columbus out of it because that guy was atrocious. And yet, once again, you still have, even in Minnesota, where, you know, you have white politicians who are screaming, no, Columbus has to be remembered. And you just want to look and it's like, why? Why is this so such a threat to you to actually learn the actual history of the guy?
Right, exactly. I mean, Columbus did not, I mean, maybe he sailed the ocean blue in 1492, but he certainly didn't step foot in what we actually call America now. He actually landed on, what was it, Hispaniola, I believe, is
yep.
what he named it once he landed. And, you know, those people there are still suffering in the same way that people of color here in the United States are suffering from colonialism. And I think it's important to remember, too, you know, there is that threat of this very vague history that they intend, this is kind of white male perspective, intends to carry and feels very threatened that if you, you know, bring up that, oh, maybe that's not so accurate. But I think one thing that's really important for people of from everywhere in the world to remember is that we were all colonized. I mean, the most common holiday on the entire planet is independence from the British rule. There's like 429 countries, like 40 some countries. I don't even remember. It's some ridiculous number that celebrate independence from British rule.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Ireland was fighting British rule as late as the 1990s, you know, like India and all these places. And I think people truly forget how close colonization is to all of us, that we were all colonized, that at one point we were all people who had our own indigenous ways and cultures and languages. And those were brutally snuffed out of us through colonialism and religion and, you know, just conquering. And I think that a lot of people who, you know, are white that feel maybe they have trouble connecting should remember that, you know, a lot of their ancestors were colonized too. And I think that helps to put it into perspective for a lot of people that, you know, we were all colonized and we don't have to live this way if we choose not to.
A lot of white settlers that came to the United States were running from in terror from what they left behind, you know, oppressive government regimes that were trying to wipe out their religion, their race, their region. And they left. I mean, it was coming, and it is quite bizarre. People got here and almost immediately forgot that they were persecuted and started to become the persecutors. Which, within regards to the Native Americans, the slave trade, you know, it really is an interesting dichotomy which exists within this country.
Right, and again, it's not just the U.S. too. This exists in Canada. This exists in South America. This exists in mm-hmm. Europe. I mean, these things exist all over. But I mean, if we're truly going to determine what we want the world to be, we have to acknowledge, okay, so up until now, the things that built the world maybe weren't the right things to do, but how are we going to move forward from them? And hanging on to this history in this way is the opposite of what we need to be doing. You know, Indigenous people are not out here on Indigenous Peoples Day demanding revenge, trying to do anything violent. We're just here asking for the truth to be told, and we've been asking for that for a long time, and that would go a long way for this to be the history of America and not just the history of Indigenous people. You know, Indigenous history is taught as the history of Indigenous people, not as American history. The same way that Black history is taught as the history of Black people and not as the American history of slavery. You know, the way that we even frame these things in our minds needs to change. And that's I think really what we're asking for ultimately in a lot of situations is simply recognition and respect as BIPOC people.
You know, Ogumba Ganu Ikwe is joining us once again, news person extraordinaire from the Native Roots Radio I Am Awake show, 6 o'clock hour right here on AM 950, right after this show. Ogama, one of the things that's interesting for me, and just from what I've noticed, is I don't think I've ever had more Native American representation in my government than I've had right now. I mean, there are quite a few Native Americans within the Minnesota state government, the Biden administration, but yet at the same time, and something, if you've listened to Ogama during Native Roots Radio, she has talked extensively about Line 3. Here we are. It's kind of, it seems like we're making steps forward in representation, but we still have a lot of the same problems, in the sense being that we can't stop Line 3, that treaties which should supersede the Constitution are once again being ignored, as they always have been in this country. And it is frustrating, because as we take steps forward in getting representation, it just doesn't seem like we're getting the results that we were expecting to get once we put that representation in.
Yeah, it definitely feels like the deck is a little bit stacked on that, you know. You're right. We have more Indigenous representation in our actual government in Minnesota than I think we've ever had before in history, including our lieutenant governor. And yet Line 3 is still coming through. Line 3 just has, as of last week, oil pumping through it. And the funny part about the treaties that you mentioned is that, if you haven't been listening on Native Roots Radio, where I do the news, is that Alberta, Canada, is invoking its treaty rights with the United States on behalf of the Line 5 fight in Wisconsin and Michigan. And the United States they're asking the United States to honor a treaty that they made with Canada about not interfering on one another's fossil fuel infrastructure or transportation. I forget exactly what the treaty was. And yet they continually ignore the treaty rights of Indigenous peoples in the U.S. and Canada. They continue to arrest us. Over 100 people were arrested today in front of the White House for asking Biden to shut down Line 3. Because we have Indigenous representation in our government in Minnesota. We have been peacefully fighting. We have fought in court. We have taken every possible course to say we were not consulted and this is wrong. And we are at the steps of the White House going, you need to do something about this. And yet we are still ignored. We're still persecuted. We're still arrested. We've done everything we were told to do. And yet it is still not enough. And on Indigenous Peoples Day, it's almost so frustrating. Mm-hmm. What more do you want us to do? What more could we possibly do to make it be known that we need to be heard on this issue, not just for ourselves, for Indigenous people, but for the climate? I mean, this is not something that Minnesota really needs.
Well, and one of the things from my perspective that I've seen that it blows my mind is it's almost as if the people behind these pipelines know they're wrong, know they're going to pollute, know it's ineffective, inefficient, know that the energy systems of our world are changing. They know all this. And they know that the Native Americans the Indigenous people of Minnesota have a right to stop this pipeline from coming through with the treaties. And yet they ignore it. And it seems as if the mentality is, well, in 50 years, we'll build a very nice memorial to all the people that try to stop this pipeline and say, gee willikers, we should have listened to you back then. That's the thing that's got to change. You got to change this mentality of, it's very Republican thing. Don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness. And that is kind of where they still are with this stuff. And they don't seem to understand is that every time you don't ask for permission, you just ask for forgiveness. It just erodes any faith that you have in the system even further.
Right. There can't be any trust when you're going about your dealings with tribal governments and BIPOC people in that way, that, oh, well, you know, we think this is the right thing to do, so we're going to ignore you. And then, oh, you were right, and we should do something about that. So here's a very nice statue in your honor, or here's Black Lives Matter Plaza at the U.S. Yeah. Capitol. But those are strictly performative actions. They're performative. And the word perform is no accident in the performative action. Mm-hmm. Somebody outside our hotel who's part of this event was just talking about that this morning. These are performative actions that don't actually help. Mm-hmm. They don't prevent these things from happening. And you're right. We need to shift that focus from asking permission from asking forgiveness to asking permission to looking and respecting our BIPOC communities and our youth leaders and our Indigenous communities and our Black communities and our Hispanic communities, all of these different communities that we have in this country, and looking at them and asking their permission. Is this what you think is the right thing to do? And hearing those voices. And as Americans, it's it's been a fight over and over again for us to do that. And I, you know, being here at the Lincoln Memorial, I mean, mm-hmm. there's so many different types of people here. I mean, I think there's more diversity here than I've seen probably anywhere in Minnesota. And it's beautiful to see so many different types of people here. Mm-hmm. But to see so many different types of people here and looking at these monuments and realizing that we don't all have equal representation and our voices aren't being heard in the same way is painful.
Mm-hmm. One of the things which too, and the final point I want to make with you here on this, is that there is this tendency to believe that, and I think we both can agree, Donald Trump, his entire administration, my God, they were atrocious. It was one of the worst things that ever happened to this country, hands down. But the mentality of we're not as bad as that doesn't go far enough. And that especially when you get, and I get tired of this over and over again. Trust me, how many election cycles I've gone through. I get real tired of Democratic DFL politicians promising the world and the sun, saying we'll stop this, we'll protect this, we'll do this, and they just don't follow through. And then when it comes through for re-election time, they're out there saying, well, we're still better than Trump. Yeah, I mean, true. No one's going to argue that. But at the same time, you can't, you know, the amount of frustration and people that just walk away from the entire process because they haven't delivered on those promises, they haven't fulfilled, they're just banking on the fact that we're not as bad as Trump is what there's going to be their re-election campaign. The reality is they need to deliver more than just slogans at the beginning of their first campaign.
Exactly. And, you know, that's kind of how a lot of people, Indigenous people in Minnesota, are feeling about Governor Walz. Governor Walz promised through social media and throughout his campaign to the Indigenous people who turned out in droves to get him and Peggy Flanagan elected that Line 3 was a non-starter for him and that, you know, this wasn't going to be an issue because he said he didn't agree with it, plowing through Indigenous lands. And then, you know, the first thing he did when he got to office was no different than Trump putting through Keystone XL. You know, it was an absolute betrayal. And it is. It's super frustrating to listen to these same things over and over. And I haven't been through that many election cycles, but believe me, I know what you're talking about. You know, like, I'm in my 30s, so I've been through, and, you know, since voting since I was 18, I haven't been through that many election cycles. But even just watching it thus far has been, it's been obvious how much gets promised and how much does not get done. And the Biden administration has made a lot of promises for climate and for our BIPOC communities that he is not being held accountable for. And that's a big part of why we were here today.
And it should be noted, once again, Governor Walz, President Biden, they're doing a lot of good things, but they have failed the Indigenous people. There were promises made by both of their campaigns, and they've just not followed through. And it's nice that there's better representation, but it's got to be followed through with action, and that's just not happening. If you're not listening to Ogama's news, I cannot recommend her newscast more because it is the only place you will hear Native American news, Indigenous news, every weeknight here in the 6 o'clock hour with Robert Pilot and crew. You know, you guys have been talking about the Line 3. You guys talked about Line 5 as well. And as a matter of fact, you broke down the other day. I heard that the talk about the Canadians invoking a treaty to try to keep this pipeline going in Michigan through the Mackinac Straits. What do you guys have coming up tonight? What are you guys going to be talking about during your show tonight?
I'm sure we'll do a recap of the events that happened today for the People versus Fossil Fuels rally at the White House. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about some other events that might have happened around the country for Indigenous Peoples Day. And then we have Dr. Anthony Stately of Native American Community Clinic, who's supposed to join us tonight, I believe. Don't quote me on that. And always Lewis Eagle Thunder, who does a fantastic history segment.
Yes.
And he's on TikTok as Lakota Guy on TikTok, and then our fabulous host Robert and Wendy Pilot, who always steer us in the right direction. So it's going to be a great show tonight, as it always is.
I love Lewis. I am too old to be on TikTok, though. It's I've officially aged out. Oh, no, you're not welcome here. Oh, okay. I'm an old man now. But it is a fantastic show. Native Roots Radio, I Am Awake. That is coming up and going to be on, of course, at 6 o'clock weeknights right here. Ogama Gnu Ikwe. Ogama, have a safe rest of your trip out there. Safe travels back, and hope to hear from you before too long again, okay?
All right. Yes. Thanks so much for having me on, Matt. I appreciate your time. Have a great afternoon.
Have a great afternoon. Ogamagunu Ikwe from Native Roots Radio on Indigenous Peoples Day. And still the great shrug that happens in regards to the Indigenous people of this country. Doesn't matter the party. It's just the same result. And that's the truth. I can say this. When it comes to Indigenous people issues, when it comes to veterans issues, it doesn't matter the administration. No one's doing any damn thing to fix these things. And that's the real frustrating part. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back to the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Can I get some nasty bass? Of course, we'll spotlight Ogama. It's gonna be kinda right tonight. And if you're not, seriously, you will... In 5 minutes with listening to Ogamagunu Ikwe do the news, you will know more about Native American news than you probably learn in a year with any major cable network or major evening newscast or in the Star Tribune or any. Seriously, 5 minutes. Take this week. Listen for 5 minutes to Ogama's newscast and you'll hear more about Native American news. Then you're like, wait a minute. How is this not being covered? I mean, she was the one that got me. I was like, what do you mean there was leaks on this pipeline as they're building it and no one was doing anything? And yeah, it's exceptional. It's exceptional. 952-946-6205. It is Indigenous Peoples Day. Now, reminder, they did... tear down the Columbus statue at the state capitol, which leads to the question, what the hell did we have the Columbus statue up there at the state capitol? Oh, I got it. That's right. Italian Americans raised it up. And it should be, once again, it should be noted that because a lot of white Republicans like to say, kind of point out, it's like, you intolerant left, the Italians, who were persecuted forever, they're the ones who helped put up that statue as a source of pride. Well, let's make sure we understand something here about the Columbus statue. It was put up, you know, first of all, when the Italians were untolerated, there was a lot of white people that were being intolerant of them. Let's make sure we understand something. What was the show I watched? There was a movie... In the 1930s, it was just the blatant racism against the Italians. Yeah, they were being ridiculed, but it was because of the whites that were here as the Italians came over. They're the ones that persecuted them. So let's not skip past that little thing. But it was when other minority groups that white America hated more than the Italians started becoming more prominent that the white culture embraced the Italians and Columbus as a way to remind particularly the indigenous people as well as other minorities, we were the whites were the conquerors over everyone else. And that was kind of one of those things where it was part of that whole, you know, revisiting of the slavery, the Confederacy, rewriting it, turning it into something it wasn't. No, it was a bunch of wealthy white slave owners who wanted to keep black people as slaves, who basically convinced poor whites in the South that if slavery ended, that the blacks were going to come in and take their food and take their wives and take their dogs and take their kids and take their houses. And so you'd better stop this. And it was all about racism. It was just the Civil War was all about racism. There was no nobility to it. There was no honor to it for the Confederacy. They're a bunch of traitorous jackasses that got their asses handed to them. You're welcome. That being said, they tried there desperately to kind of change things up and change how history as it was and to turn Columbus into, you know, like I said, it was embraced. He was put up there as a symbol of, you know, white pride. And that's what it really is. But Columbus, I mean, when he was torn down, it was Bill Ingebrigtsen, Senator Ingebrigtsen, and it was Carla Nelson. Was it Nelson, Senator Nelson? Were the ones that wrote the letter saying, they wrote the letter. That's right. They wrote the letter to the Minnesota Historical Society to ask them about putting the statue up. And the Minnesota Historical Society is, we really don't have the jurisdiction for the statues outside the Capitol. That's someone else. And yeah, so it was a lot of preening, but you might want to figure out who you need to send that letter to before you start sending it. But the same thing was Ingebrigtsen kind of embraced the, hey, he was a symbol of Italian-Americans, and Italian-Americans were persecuted. Yeah, by a guy named Ingebrigtsen and stuff. Trust me about that, Bill. You know your history or not. The Scandinavians did not like the Italians, and they persecuted them pretty bad. Just to let you know, spoiler alert, you know, I know you guys don't like critical race theory, but you really should read up on this stuff before you start blabbing. Same thing with Nelson. Trust me, Nelsons were not a fan of the Italians either back then. They weren't. But as you guys talk about this, I mean, Ingebrigtsen talked about, oh, this is a proud part of Italian-American history. The reality is their argument was more about, well, sure, there's a process to take down the statue that doesn't involve yanking it down. So we need to put the statue back up and then try to take it down through the legal channels. What? You want to, what? You want to do what again? But that was kind of their argument. Oh, we're not saying Columbus is a, you know, is all great. But if there's a process, we need to put it back up and then start the process to take it back down. Okay, you guys seem stupid. But Republican Party today. Now, I guess it is the Republican Party, and if you employed Anton Lazaro, who's allegedly guilty of some charges, I mean, I can understand maybe there's a thread here. But I will say this. Let's run through the real legacy of Columbus, and I'll let you decide if this is someone we should have a statue of. I want you to think about, we could put a statue of Prince up. That prince. Yes, our prince. Phenomenal. Probably the greatest guitar player that ever lived. Dead serious. That guy was brilliant. One of the greatest performers ever to grace this planet. We are blessed that he was from the state. We could easily put up a prince thing, or we could put up Christopher Columbus. Now, I'll run through Columbus. I'll say on the prince side, 1999, Purple Rain. Yeah, I mean, I think he, get off. I mean, come on, get off. That's if we put a Prince sign, a statue up there, we should have get off playing the entire time. You walk past it, and that's that. Yeah, or Erotic City. It's one of the two, man.
Good replacement of a statue.
Yeah, seriously. We also could go with the replacements and Bastards of the Young, but I mean, it just, you know, we'll let you figure out what you want to do, okay?
You could build a statue about anybody compared to Columbus, well, with the exception of a few people.
Here we go. Let's run through it. Columbus kidnapped a native indigenous woman, gave her to crew members to rape. Miguel de Cuno, who participated in Columbus's second expedition. While I was on the boat, I captured a very beautiful woman who Lord Admiral Columbus gave to me. When I had taken her to my cabin, she was naked. It was custom, blah, blah, blah. You can kind of figure out what happened. Yep, he was pro-raping of the natives. On Hispaniola, the member of Columbus's crew publicly cut off Indians' ears to shock others into submission. After the attack by more than 2,000 Indians, Columbus had an underling, Alonso de Orja, bring him three Indian leaders whom Columbus then ordered publicly beheaded. He also ordered his men to grab another Native American, bring him to the middle of the village, cut off his ears in retribution for the natives forgetting to be helpful in the Spaniards while fording a stream. So basically, they were trying to cross a stream. They said that they weren't being helpful enough. They executed three of them and then cut the ears off another guy. Wow. Columbus kidnapped and enslaved more than 1,000 people in Hispaniola. Columbus ordered 1,500 men and women seized, letting 400 go and condemning 500 to be sent to Spain, another 600 to be enslaved by Spanish men remaining on the island. About 200 of the 500 sent to Spain died on the voyage, were thrown by the Spanish into the Atlantic. Columbus forced Native Americans to collect gold for him or else die. Columbus ordered every Native American over 14 to give a large quantity of gold on pain of... Those Indians without much gold were allowed to give cotton instead. Participants in this system were given a stamped copper or brass token to wear around their necks in what became a symbol of intolerable shame. About 50,000 Native Americans committed mass suicide other than comply with Spanish wishes. The Native American indigenous people destroyed their stores of bread so that neither they nor the invaders could be able to eat it. They plunged off cliffs, they poisoned themselves with roots, and they starved themselves to death, oppressed by the impossible requirement to deliver tributes of gold. The indigenous people were no longer able to tend for their fields or care for their sick children and the elderly. 56 years after Columbus's first voyage, only 500 of the 300,000 indigenous people remained on Hispaniola. I want to repeat that number. 56 years after Columbus's first voyage, 56, only 500 out of 300,000 indigenous people remained on Hispaniola. He wiped out the entire island's population. Population figures from 500 years ago are necessarily imprecise, but the estimates that there are about 300,000 inhabitants of Hispaniola in 1492, between 1494 and 1496, 100,000 died in 3 years, half due to mass suicide. In 1508, the population was down to 60,000. By 1548, it was estimated to be only 500. Columbus was also horrible to the Spanish under his rule. While paling in comparison to the crimes against the indigenous peoples, Columbus's rule over Spanish settlers was also brutal. He ordered at least a dozen Spaniards to be whipped in public, tied by the neck, and bound together by their feet. I mean, this guy, it's not like there was one thing. He just was constantly doing crap like this. Here's the most disturbing thing, and I've said some pretty disturbing crap here. Here's the most disturbing one. Settlers under Columbus sold 9 and 10-year-old girls into sexual slavery. This one he admitted himself in a letter to Dona Juana de la Torre, a friend of the Spanish queen. There are plenty of dealers who go about looking for girls. Those from 9 and 10 are now in demand, and for all ages, a good price must be paid. Wow. 9 and 10. Reminder, Senator Ingebrigtsen and Senator Nelson wanted to put this guy's statue back up. This guy's statue. They wanted to put his statue back up. 9 and 10-year-old girls. 9 and 10-year-old girls kidnapped, sold into sexual slavery. Wow. Native American slaves were beheaded when their Spanish captors couldn't be bothered to untie them. Benjamin Keene, a historian of the Spanish conquest of the Americans, know that multiple sources confirm accounts of exhausted Indian carriers chained by the neck whose heads the Spanish severed from their bodies so they might not have to stop to untie them. Wow. When Columbus first saw the native Arawaks that came to greet him and his crew spoke with a peaceful and admiring tone, they brought us parrots and balls of cotton and spears with many things. They willingly traded everything they owned. They were well-built with good bodies and handsome features. They did not bear arms and did not know them, for I showed them a sword and they took the edge and cut themselves out of ignorance. They have no iron. Their spears are made of cane. They would make fine servants with... I want to make sure we understand. They come there. They're being friendly. Hello, welcome. They don't even know weapons. And the first thing out of his mouth, hey, these guys would be great slaves. Wow. Wow. With 50 men, we could subjugate them all and make them do whatever we wanted. Just evil. Just freaking evil. After several months in the Caribbean on January 13, 1493, two natives were murdered during trading. Columbus, who had otherwise described the natives as gentle people, wrote, "They are evil, and I believe them to be on the island of Caribe, that they eat men." He also described them as savage cannibals with dog noses and drink bloods of their victims. Columbus's men were rapists and murderers, well documented on that account. He enslaved the people for gold. We've already talked about that. A second account of this. This is not just one person saying the 9 and 10-year-olds. In addition to putting natives to work as slaves in gold mines, Columbus also sold sex slaves to his men, some as young as 9. Columbus and his men also raided villages for sex and sport. In the year 1500, Columbus wrote, 100 castellanos can be easily obtain a woman as for a farm, and is a very general, and there are plenty of dealers who go about looking for girls. Those 9 and 10 are now in demand. Columbus's own words, people. His own words. And finally, Columbus men used native people for dog food. In the early years of Columbus's conquest, there are butcher shops throughout the Caribbean where Native American bodies were sold as dog food. There's also a practice known as the Infernal Chase or Manhunt, in which Native Americans were hunted by war dogs. These dogs, who wore armor, had been fed human flesh, were a fierce match for the Native Americans. Yeah, I'm not even going to go into the rest of that story because it's just so damn disturbing, it's hard to even comprehend. But there's your hero, Republican Party, white America. There's your hero. And no, he didn't discover America. The indigenous people that had lived here for 20-some thousand years, they were here first. Who's the comedian that said, I've discovered America. I don't think he sees us. they were here. Shock to the system. It's like, you know, yeah, it's just... He didn't even get to the American, the North American continent. He wasn't a hero. He was a horrible human being. And there was no kindness or dignity to the individual. There's nothing here. And I'll be damned if I'm going to allow a statue of a man who kidnapped 9 and 10-year-old girls and sold them into the sex trade to be reinstalled at our state capitol. And any ignorant jackass, I'm looking at you, Bill Ingebrigtsen, any ignorant jackass who out there wants to defend this guy, like I said, when you've got the case of Anton Lazaro going on, I'll just let that hang. He shouldn't go back up. Put Prince up. For goodness sakes. How cool. What Prince would you go through? I'd go with the purple with the frills. That'd be a heck of a statue.
Oh yeah.
Give him with the guitar. Or the Miami Super Bowl halftime show. And have him with his guitar out there playing like that. That would be a great one. And you could have music with it. You could have music with it. How great would that be? Nothing against, give me Arnie Carlson. Is there an Arnie Carlson statue? There's no music he could put with Arnie Carlson. I don't think he was, like, was he doing yodeling or banjo or something? I don't think that we could do that. But you could do it with Prince. Husker Du. I could make an argument, Husker Du, the importance of their sound and on the punk music scene. My goodness, they were an important band. You could put a Husker Du statue would be a fine addition to the state capitol. A fine addition. Maybe not Bob Mould with Sugar. I mean, some of the work's a little inconsistent there. But I love Mould. I love Bob Mould. But, no, it's a Husker Du kind of thing. I think that's where you want to go with it. 952-946-6205. Gary is in Minneapolis. Thanks for holding, Gary. Welcome on into the show.
Yeah, Matt, I was going to talk about some of the history of the Air Watch in the Bahamas, but you covered that pretty good. But I heard the Spanish, I've read about this stuff in history, they wanted to make slaves out of the natives or the Indians, and it didn't work out, so that's how they brought black people from Africa to do the slavery down there. And so it's a morbid history. And then, I'll tell you something else. When I was in fifth grade, the teacher, she put a picture of Ike up the year he won, and of course I didn't like him. But she would tell us that Henry Ford was such a great guy. He hired 10% black, you know, when the others went. I went home to my father, who was in the union movement. He said, yeah, he did that to keep the union out, keep them fighting with each other. And the blacks, they got all the what do you call that, foundry jobs, and he went to about 40 years old, many of them. So just thought I'd give you a few points on things I heard. Bye.
Bye, Gary. Ogema talking about the history of the, you know, you're out in the Washington Memorial, Washington, D.C., and you're seeing all the memorials, and they're quite inspiring, but as well, a lot of them have a real double edge to the things. Built by slaves, people that they're built to honor own slaves, or, you know, were open racists. Or in the case of Lincoln, and like I said, I mean, perspective is a very interesting thing. In white America, Lincoln is basically a god in for many people. But the reality is that you can't just ignore the fact that because he didn't want to deal with the Native American issue in Minnesota and in this country, he sent in a heavy-handed, heavy force to treat these people like they are prisoners of war. Hang many of them, and then keep them in a prison camp under atrocious conditions and ship them down or upriver in the case of the Minnesota River. Just unforgivable. It is unforgivable. And so even the ones where you can say, well, Lincoln did, you know, they're definitely, you know, he held the Union together, fought the Civil War, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation. Yeah, those are good things. But you got to look at the negative, too. And if you're a Native American, indigenous people have a very legitimate gripe against Abraham Lincoln. History is complicated. History has always been complicated. But it shouldn't always be complicated. It always should. And anyone that sits there and says, no, I don't want you to teach that. Just teach the white-centric version of history that I learned, and that's just that. Well, you can just shut up, because you know what? The age of lies is ending. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Don't ever put that Columbus statue back up. Do not do that. No. We'll take a break. Come on back. I'll give you the details of the latest story, that breaking story. No charges in the Winston Boogie Smith Jr. case. I'll talk about that. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. Get control, precious taking its toll, stuck in the middle. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. There was breaking news when we got to begin the show, but I wanted to get Olga Madan and then obviously talk a little bit more about what she had touched on. Here you go. The undercover officers who fatally shot Winston Boogie Smith Jr. atop an uptown Minneapolis parking ramp last summer will not face criminal charges because Smith drew a handgun on them and fired, the Crow Wing County attorney announced on Monday. Though I am unable to determine who fired first, it is relevant in this case that Crow Wing County attorney Donald Ryan, who wrote in a letter to Hennepin County attorney Mike Freeman, dated October 6th, but released Monday, in an individual initiates a deadly force confrontation, a law enforcement officer does not have to want to be shot or shot at, does not have to wait to be shot at reaction. Smith was shot June 3rd by members of the U.S. Marshal Service's North Star Violent Offender Task Force, which was attempting to arrest him on a warrant for being a felon in possession of a gun. He was shot in an SUV with a date atop a parking ramp in the 1400 block of West Lake Street across from Stella's Fish Cafe, where he had just had dined and posted on social media about the experience. Smith had been building a small local following for his online comedy sketches. Several nights of public protest followed the shooting. The reaction to the two task force members in this case was reasonable and justified, Ryan wrote. The conduct was clearly in response to the apparent threat of death or great bodily harm. Ryan said the task force members were readily identifiable to Smith, who failed to comply with officers' commands while exiting his vehicle and insisted the deadly force by drawing his handgun and firing at them. There is no body camera or squad car dash cam footage of the incident because none was in use. Although the shooting occurred in Minneapolis, Freeman sent the case to Ryan, who is based in Brainerd, to avoid the appearance of conflict of interest. Yes, because no one understands the complexities of racial issues than the county attorney in Brainerd. The Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension investigated the shooting and forwarded findings to the Crow Wing County's attorney's office in late July. The preliminary investigation indicated Smith was shot by two deputies, one from Hennepin County, one from Ramsey, who are working on the task force. Federal marshals operate under the U.S. Department of Justice to protect blah, blah, blah. All right. First of all, let me put out the obvious here. This feels like Freeman went shopping. They went shopping to go to Crow Wing County attorney to get the Crow Wing. Because I can tell you right now, there are some counties in the state where if you presented a case where a black man was shot by police officers, even if there was body cam footage, even if there was copious amounts of evidence that showed that the police officers were in the wrong, that they would find no way to hold those police officers, I can guarantee you. And so the fact that this went to the Crow Wing County attorney is a joke. Second of all, can I make the point? They approached his car. It's not like he drove at a barricade. And we still do not understand the question, and we talked about this at length after the shooting. The U.S. Marshal Service does not operate like this. They're not supposed to. They're not a walk-the-beat kind of cop who goes on out there to try to find someone. And by all accounts, they were frantically trying to find someone to arrest on that day in June. And it seems like they stumbled upon, you know, Winston Boogie Smith and approached him as he's trying to leave. And you want to know the truth is, you keep saying they're undercover, but then you keep saying it was clear they were police. Were you? Because we just had the Stallings case where we had a SWAT team that was undercover, didn't have any identification on them, didn't identify themselves, and just started shooting at Stallings in the middle of the street. Is that the kind of IDing these guys so-called did? And it should be noted, it's almost like the setup was right there to begin with because there was no body cam footage and there was no police car footage. And by the sounds of it, any other footage that was anywhere nearby got confiscated by the federal government, and I have no idea where that's at. This stinks. This stinks. And the fact that Freeman, once again, here we have the decision to send it to freaking Brainerd. Could you find a whiter part of this state to send this case to? Seriously. Yeah, you know, it's... Why don't you just send it to the Idaho, state prosecutor? You know, we'll get their take on this. No charges, no charge. But you see, this is the setup anyway. Set up in the first place. No one had any video footage going on. No one in the city of freaking Minneapolis. No one had a body cam on. How stupid are you guys? And you then send it to Crow Wing County to basically get them to say, oh, I don't see anything here. Welcome to Minneapolis. Hour two is up next. You know, Brett and I were talking during the news. Could you find a whiter county attorney to look at the Winston Boogie Smith case? Because we said in the very northern tier, they went with Crow Wing County, Brainerd area. The northern tier, and once again, I'm not saying they're great up there, but at least they have some experience with Native American issues and other minority groups, but a lot of Native American issues up there. On the southern border of the state, they're dealing with a lot of Latino, Hispanic issues down there because a lot of people come in and work in the factory processing plants and work on farms and agriculture. Same thing in kind of the West Central. No, I honestly think, I don't think you could probably find a whiter county attorney.
I mean, even St. Cloud would probably be a better option. I mean, you at least have a sizable Somali population in that area.
Duluth, St. Cloud, or St. Louis County up there, you know, you've got a metro area there. So you're dealing with, you have a large variety of minorities within that city. No, this is, you know, you to go to Crow Wing County, and when I say whitest, I mean, it's just your the district, the individual that's dealing with this, reviewing this case, it probably is one of the least experienced county attorneys in the state dealing with racial issues. And that's where they went with that guy to go over review the Winston Boogie Smith Jr. case.
That's a good point to bring up experience. You think you would want to turn it over to a prosecutor who has experience with these types of cases.
Rochester, St. Louis County. You know, even where Moorhead, what county is that? Do you know off the top of your head, Moorhead?
Oh, I don't know the name of the county.
I mean, there are places you could go. Yeah, I think we all saw that cab coming down the street with its doors wide open. It's just disturbing now that it's here. And it's disturbing to see that, you know, the legal words speak to allow the officers to walk. Even though there's so many problems with this entire case, it's beyond believable that this is here we are once again. Here we are once a freaking again. People and unfortunately, the people behind this system are slapping each other on the back and shaking hands and high-fiving and talking about, you know, a case well done. Really? Wow. Just disturbing. I can't wait for this whole system to go away. I really can't. 952-946-6205. We did have someone complain to us about Columbus. That what was their comment? Why that was too long ago?
We won't play the whole voicemail just because we don't need to hear that. But the gist of it was is that, well, it was 500 years ago, and most people were bad 500 years ago when you talk about nobility and leaders. Then he said, focus on the communists instead and what they've done.
Focus on the communists. Okay, first of all, listen here, Righto. We don't have a – do we have a Karl Marx Day here? It's not Columbus – we've gotten rid of Columbus Day. We're getting in the process of getting rid of it. We're getting Indigenous Peoples Day. I don't believe we have a Karl Marx Day or a Lenin Day or a Stalin Day. We don't have that, do we?
That would just be a Republican pipe dream to have the Democrats oppose Karl Marx Day.
Well, we don't have that. Do we have a statue of Karl Marx or Lenin or Stalin over at the state capitol that needs to be ripped down?
No, but I will Google Hugo Chavez to see if we have a statue.
Do we have a Hugo Chavez? No, I don't think we – you see, the problem here is – we're talking about, does the man deserve the recognition of Columbus Day? No, he doesn't. Does the man deserve to have a statue over at the Minnesota State Capitol? No, he doesn't. And you not wanting us to talk about it and screaming about commies, you're just an idiot, man. And just seriously, just stop, breathe, let those veins on your forehead sink back into your skull. Breathe. Christopher Columbus was not a good guy. He wasn't a good guy. And you're right. There were a lot of bad people back then. But we don't have statues of a lot of bad people at the Minnesota State Capitol from the 1400s and 1500s. And we don't have days set aside to honor people like that. So that's why we're complaining about it. That's why we're educating people about it. That's why things need to change. Okay. Great. Thanks.
I think even by historical standards, trafficking 9 and 10-year-olds was not a big thing back then, I would imagine.
I would hope not.
Yeah,
that's
bad for any historical period.
Oh, and you want to talk about the 1950s? How about the Tuskegee situation? Okay, I'll tell you what. Pick up a history book there, Righto. I got you. You think that the commies were the only bad people in the 1950s? Boy, oh boy. A lot of stuff you need to catch up on. Read a book, okay? Read a book. 952-946-6205. Are you ready? Brett, I'm going to ask you a question here. I want your honest answer.
All right.
There is a list out now of the 50 drunkest counties in the United States. What do you think the number of those counties that are located in Wisconsin? 50 in the entire United States of America. 50 counties. How many of them are located in Wisconsin?
I'll give you an exact number. I'm going to say 13.
13. Okay, so Brett's number. The 50 drunkest counties in the United States, the entire United States of America, Alaska to Miami, Maine down to Hawaii. 50 drunkest counties. Brett has said he thinks 13 are in Wisconsin. Slightly lower. 41 are in Wisconsin.
No way.
41 of the top 50 drunkest counties in this country are in Wisconsin. For the idea, all of the counties are located in the upper Midwest. We only have one. I'll get to that in a second. But 41 of the 50 drunkest counties in the United States are in Wisconsin.
I thought 13 might be high, and you were going to come back and go low.
You would think New Jersey, you start running. I mean, they're healthier out there. It's wine out in California and stuff like that. And, it's dope in Seattle and Portland. That's not going to be there or anything. But, you could think to yourself,
Florida,
moonshine, come on. I mean, West Virginia should be representing. Nope.
Kentucky, yeah.
No, pound for pound. This is, okay, I want to make sure I'm very clear. This is comical, but it's also freaking terrifying. When you think of the pound for pound amount of obscene drunks that are in Wisconsin right now. The Midwest is home to all 50 drunkest counties in the United States, including one in Minnesota, a whopping 41 in Wisconsin.
What is the Minnesota county? We got
to
know
we'll
that.
I'll get to that.
Okay,
here,
all right.
24/7 Wall Street identified the 50 drunkest counties in the U.S. out of 3,106 counties using data from the 2021 County Health Rankings and Roadmap Report from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. This is their own internal report that throws them under the bus. In every county on the list, more than one in four adults drinks excessively. Nationwide, fewer than one in five adults drinks excessively. So in every one of these counties, once again, it's in these counties, the top 50, one in four adults drinks excessively. At least the nationwide average is one in five. Le Sueur County, Minnesota's own Le Sueur County, which is interesting because that's the one that's kind of between Faribault and St. Peter. And I think it's got part of New Prague in it, but Waterville's in it. It doesn't have a lot of big towns in it, but that's our lone representative. Le Sueur County, and it's not, I've been down there. It's a pretty county. You got things in it. It's not the ugliest place to live. Le Sueur County in South Central Minnesota ranking number 38. It's the only Minnesota county on the list, according to 24/7 Wall Street. 27.2% of adults there reported they binge drank or drank heavily in the past 30 days. Binge drinking is defined as four or more drinks for a woman and five or more drinks for a man in a single occasion. Heavy drinking is defined as more than one drink per day for women and more than two drinks per day for men. So, yeah, binge drank four to five more drinks. Five or more drinks, as a matter of fact, for a man on a single occasion has been drinking 27.2. Wow, that's a lot of drinking, dude. The county has a median income of $71,081, the 291st highest of the 106 counties reviewed, according to the publication. 12.9% of adults report poor or fair health, 146 lowest, and 31.3 of the driving deaths in the county involved alcohol. So 31.3, well, you know, that kind of, if it's got 27 point, yeah, that kind of matches. The state of Wisconsin is home to 41 of the 50 drunkest counties. More than half the state's 72 counties made the list. Wow. Including nine in the 12 counties that border Minnesota. If you look at the story here, every county around Green Bay, everyone, the entire Door County, all the ones that go up that peninsula, every county is on that list.
Are there 41 counties in Wisconsin? Is it all of Wisconsin?
72 counties
okay,
total.
It's not all of them.
Over half. I want to make sure we understand this. These are the 50 drunkest counties in the entire United States of America. 41 of them are in Wisconsin, and that is more than half the entire state. Coming at number one overall, Outagamie County in Wisconsin. 31% of adults reported they binge drink or drink heavily. I can tell you right now, I'm not buying that number. I think that number is a lot higher. I think that's the people that answered the question honestly, but I can guarantee you didn't get all the people answering honestly. The northeastern Wisconsin county, which includes the city of Appleton, has a median income of $65,000. According to the publication, 13.7% of adults report fair or poor health, and 32% of driving deaths involve alcohol. 31% of alcohol, yeah, I would believe that matches up. The five drunkest counties are all from Wisconsin. Outagamie County in Wisconsin, Calumet County in Wisconsin, Walworth County in Wisconsin, Pierce County in Wisconsin, and Polk County in Wisconsin. All of them basically close to 29% of the adults reported binge drinking. Iowa is home to six counties on the list, so outpacing Minnesota dramatically. Dakotas, one in North Dakota, one in South Dakota each. That's the entire list right there. Health officials say moderate drinking, two drinks for men, one drink for women, carries relative little risk, with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention saying drinking less is better for health than drinking more. Excessive drinking, though, is one of the main risk factors for preventable disease. The short-term risks of drinking too much include impaired judgment, which can lead to injuries or death, alcohol poisoning. Long-term risks include liver disease, cancers, high blood pressure, increased risk of a heart attack or stroke, poor mental health, and alcohol use disorders. The CDC says excessive alcohol use led to about 95,000 deaths annually from the U.S. from 2011 to 2015 and shortened the lives of those who died by the average of 29 years. Wow. In Minnesota, 2019, 60.5% of adults say they drank alcohol, 20.7% of adults reporting they binge drank, giving Minnesota one of the highest binge drinking rates in the nation that year. And that was 2019. What do you think? You think it went up or down last year?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it was all delivered. You could get alcohol delivered now. Oh, good. That's not a bad recipe.
Now Wisconsin's all 73 counties in 20.
Oh, God. Okay. So
we probably added a few.
I'll say this. Years ago, I gave up drinking. It wasn't doing me any good. I walked away from it. One of the better choices I ever made. Now, alcohol is legal. You go, if you want to have a drink, go have a drink. That's what it's there for. And I would hope that you would know enough to pull back and not drink constantly to excess. But that's I worked for a company. We were out at a NASCAR track. This is what it is. This is America right now. I was at a NASCAR track. There are two guys, neither one of them wearing shoes, dragging a keg from outside underneath. You know, there's a tunnel that goes underneath and goes out to the center area where the campers and everything are. No shoes, and they're dragging a keg out to their camper. A keg. We in this country, if you never saw the exceptional exhibit that was over at the Minnesota History Museum on Prohibition, that was a few years back. This country back in the 1820s, 1830s, 1840s, we were a bunch of drunks. I mean, they would say that on every farm in America, there was a barrel of cider right out there with a ladle, and anyone on the farm from 6 to 100 would walk on by all day long, grab a ladle full of cider, and knock it back. They were all drunk as skunks by the afternoon. And that was actually reported. People were saying, you would not believe the amount of alcoholism that's in this country. In the 1850s, I was reading a story about Edgar Allan Poe, and of course he died of alcoholism in Baltimore. You'd go to bars in the 1850s in Baltimore, and your two choices were to get really drunk or blind drunk, which meant you were passed out. Those were your two drink options. let me take a look at the old drink menu. I think I'll try the blind drunk tonight. Thank you very much. Does that pair with appetizers? Dear Lord. So we're a country that's had an alcohol issue for years. But, you know, is it doing a lot for you at this point? That's all I'll say. Is it petite? You know, just don't be stupid enough to drink and drive. Don't be stupid enough to get yourself into a bad situation. Be careful. It's legal. You're a grown adult. You do what you're going to do. But I lose all tolerance for the people like the woman who was the 11th DWI. They caught her up in Duluth in the ditch this weekend. 11th DWI. I got no patience for you. I mean, you got a problem. You need to get some help, and you need to stop basically potentially killing human beings because your drink is more important. But that being said, that's the case. One side of the story, you want to look at this and say 41 of the counties are from Wisconsin, but then you want to say 41 of these counties are from Wisconsin. Anytime I drive to Chicago, that makes me want to just drive to Iowa and shoot it. I'll take the long way around. I won't take 94 or 90. I'll go through Iowa. I'll get Decorah and go east from there. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break, come on back. Minnesota coronavirus update when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show. God, that's a lot of alcohol. Have you ever been to a Lambo? Have you ever gone to Lambeau for a game?
I have not, no.
You will see some disturbing things, man.
Oh, I've heard, yes.
You will see the guy wearing the fake fat suit that's filled with booze, and you're just sitting there with like a straw coming out of his sternum. Don't get me wrong. Beer prices at a game are a little bit up there, but come on. I got my bodysuit. No one's noticing me. Apparently sucking my heart through a straw.
It's an A for effort, though, I guess, for bringing that there. But
God,
maybe not the wisest idea.
Yeah. there at NASCAR races. I've been to a few NASCAR races, and I have as well. I've been to Lambeau Field. I have seen drinking, and how many times have I gone out with a family? Gone out and visited family in Wisconsin, and all of a sudden it's 8 o'clock. There's a bonfire going, and everyone from age 10 and up has got a beer in their hand. And you're like, is everyone okay with this? He's not driving anywhere. Well, thank God the 10-year-old's not driving anywhere. Okay, that was my biggest concern there. Is he going out for a spin later? Is he taking grandpa home? Okay. 952-946-6205. The Minnesota coronavirus update for today. COVID-19 numbers from the Minnesota Department of Health include 3,223 new cases, 25 newly reported deaths, 21 of those deaths happening this month, 4 were in September. Death toll now is at 8,320 since the start of the pandemic. As of October 6, the state reported that 3,420,016 people had received at least one dose of COVID-19 vaccine. 3,250,511 people had completed the vaccine series. Through October 8th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 915. 915, that's up from 871 on Friday. Of those hospitalized, 241 people are in intensive care, 674 in general hospital care. Wow. 3,223 positive test results on Monday's update were from 45,812 completed tests, creating a test positivity rate of 7.03. Minnesota's test positivity rate over the past 7 days, according to Johns Hopkins University, 11.3. The number of COVID cases recorded in Minnesota has grown by 34% of late, the highest rate of growth in the entire United States of America, driven largely by substantial increases in greater Minnesota counties where there are a lot of stupid idiots that are not vaccinated. God, I'm putting a horse dewormer up the old backside, but that doesn't seem to be working. It's not? Okay. The data comes from the New York Times, which shows Minnesota has seen an average of 2,181 new COVID cases every day over the past week, represents an increase of 34% compared to 14 days ago, the most extreme jump in these counties. This during the time COVID cases nationwide actually fell by 19%. That's coming down from a September spike, though. Michigan, with an average of 4,203 cases every day, is second with an increase of 28%. Minnesota's case rate is also on the upper end at 53 cases per 100,000 people. Only 6 states and Guam have higher rates. Minnesota's averaging 18 COVID hospitalizations a day over the past week, which is up from 2 weeks ago, but still tied for the 15th lowest hospitalization rate among all 50 states. Minnesota has seen a recent COVID death rate of 0.34 people per 100,000, and that's the 18th lowest figure in the nation. State is also tied for the 15th highest rate of full vaccination in the country at 59%. While being vaccinated does not outright prevent someone from contracting COVID, it does significantly reduce the chances of experiencing severe symptoms that lead to hospitalization or death. What I think you're seeing here, and I think this is pretty much the case, is because Minnesota does actually have a fairly high vaccination rate, not in some counties. My God, there are counties in the state. There are what, 9 counties? 9 counties in the state where they have still less than half the people vaccinated. Unbelievable. 9 counties where less than half the people are vaccinated in those counties. And something would tell me that the vast majority of people that are being hospitalized or getting sick or dying are all coming from rural Minnesota at this point. Not completely, but a lot of them probably are. Well, no, I know that a lot of them are. We've had actually reports saying that the bulk of the cases, what was the number last week, is that 60% of the cases are coming from the area of the state, which has got 44.5% of the population. Those are bad numbers. Officials have, go back here. Officials have described growing capacity crisis in Minnesota hospitals, and the school year has brought about increased infections among school students and staff. I'll get to that in a second. In Minnesota, the 43 counties with a COVID case increase above the statewide rate of 34% 6%. Two are in the Twin Cities Metro. Anoka has been cases up 52% over the past 2 weeks, while Hennepin has seen increases up by 35%. But the biggest increases are being seen in greater Minnesota, where vaccination rates are much lower than the seven-county Twin Cities Metro area, now seeing the significant majority of new COVID cases in Minnesota. So, yeah, it's getting pretty bad out there. It's getting pretty bad. And until Republican politicians are out there saying, forget everything we've said, get vaccinated, wear a mask. Until they do that, I think I don't think this is going to go away anytime soon. There are just too many people that feel as if getting vaccinated or wearing a mask or trying to be safe during COVID, it means the liberals win. I got to own those libs. So I think we are seeing the beginning edge of what is going to be maybe 5 years, maybe even a decade of COVID cases in outstate Minnesota being much higher than they are anywhere else in the rest of the state. And maybe even to a point where the only place you find COVID cases are out in these idiot counties where basically Republicans have convinced people that vaccine's bad, mask bad. But you know, now that we're seeing what their arguments have brought, that the case counts are skyrocketing out there. Do you hear any of these Republicans basically saying, "Boy, I was wrong"? Nope, not at all. Not at all. They all see the skyrocketing case count, the skyrocketing death count, and they pat themselves on the back saying, "Freedom!" Just amazing. On a completely different topic, Matt is in South Minneapolis, 952-946-6205. Matt, really quick, what did you do this weekend?
I went and saw the new Bond movie at the Riverview.
What did you think?
Well, I promised that I wasn't going to spoil it.
Okay.
So I'm not going to say the thing that the villain has done that made the whole audience groan. But I'm talking about is the theme song.
Okay. Billie Eilish.
And I respect Billie Eilish, and I respect Phineas, and they're great what they did, you know, doing their own record in their bedroom, you know, and getting a Grammy. That's great. But not Shirley Bassey, not Nancy Sinatra, and definitely not Tom Jones, which is my Thunderball's like my favorite Bond thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, Adele did a great one with Skyfall. But you're saying that this Billie Eilish one is just not that good of a theme.
I respect them, but the Bond singers or the people involved with that who do the theme songs, maybe it might be flighty and stuff. Like I said, Billie Eilish and her brother have a ton of talent, but man, it's just not Bond theme song material.
It does seem like, Matt, thank you very much. I appreciate the information on that. It does seem to me the Bond films are much more going for who the big celebrity is and let's get them to do the song. And the case may be, Brett, I will let you know that after Friday, when I mentioned that View to a Kill from Duran Duran is my favorite of the Bond films, I got beaten about, man. Just because I say I like View to a Kill doesn't mean I don't like Paul McCartney and Wings. Doesn't mean I don't. Tom Jones is a great song. Shirley Bassey, Goldfinger is a phenomenal song. There are some really good songs. Know My Name from Chris Cornell. We talked about that one from Casino Royale. That's a great song. It just means I like that one a little bit better as far as the Bond songs go. And yeah.
The masses were disagreeing with you on that.
I got beaten about. I did, though. The one I did not get to the movie theater this weekend to see the movie. I did watch on, was it Hulu? I saw the Spy Who Loved Me. Watch The Spy Who Loved Me, which is not a bad film, although the constant one-line innuendo thing from Roger Moore does get a little old. Carly Simon, Nobody Does It Better. That is a great song. That is a great Bond song. And kind of hard to remember that. People forget that Carly Simon did one of them. So, but yeah. Well, you had a whole trio of them in the 90s that were just, you know, Sheryl Crow did one, Garbage did one. that weren't that good. And then the Madonna Die Another Day was not a good song. That was not a good song. Still better than Man with the Golden Gun. That's Call the Hague. there's a international crime that just happened. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. More on the Minnesota coronavirus updates. Other news stories we got to get to and recap of the breaking news. No charges against the officers in the Winston Boogie Smith case. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. So thinking during the commercial break there about Bond films, one of the things that I found interesting about the Bond themes is that you've gotten some great ones from some of the greatest vocalists of all time. Tom Jones, Thunderball, Goldfinger from Shirley Bassey, Adele from Skyfall. That was a very good one, a very good song. I would even go Tina Turner from GoldenEye. I mean, she figured out that you had to do the kind of the heavy duty kind of, you know, classic show tune style singing. If you go listen to it, she figures that out. It does lead to the question, as we got Billie Eilish on the latest, how come you haven't gone to Gaga? Lady Gaga has got one of the best voices I've ever heard. She is brilliant. And she would be one that you would want to, you know, just tell her, write the song, it's all yours. Whatever the case, we'll name the movie after whatever song it's. You name the song yourself, we'll name the movie after that. Because Gaga would be fantastic.
It's interesting. I'm surprised she hasn't been asked over the past several years. There's
you don't know of anything unless she's been asked, and she just said no, right?
I haven't heard anything. Yeah.
Okay, enough with the frivolous stuff. Let's get back to a serious talk. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. By the way, I should mention, thank you very much once again to Todd Colid, sponsoring AM 950 all this last week and today. Todd, of course, lives in Spain, can't visit necessarily our sponsors, but he, of course, wanted to help the station, so he sponsors the station by paying for, you know, these mentions, and we're very grateful. If you'd like more information on how you can do that, 952-946-8885, 952-946-8885 for more information on that. Todd's band, Just Folk, Is It Monday, their latest single, that is up there. I'll make a link for it again a little bit later on Twitter and Facebook. You can go give that video a watch. Thank you very much. Back to COVID news. Nationally, COVID-19 cases are down 20% in the last 14 days, but Minnesota cases are up more than 30%. That's according to the New York Times. Much of the increase, though, is based on the surge in cases in children. The state's now reporting 3,000 cases per week in children under the age of 12. 996 Minnesota schools have COVID cases in just one day last week. 514 cases were reported in K-12 schools, 441 on those new cases among students. Get your child vaccinated, said Dr. Chawla, a chief general pediatrics at Children's Minnesota. Her plea comes as she continues to see very sick kids. On average, we have at least 12 kids hospitalized every day with COVID, and at least half of those are in our ICU trying to recover from COVID illnesses. But kids that are eligible for the vaccine have among the lowest vaccination of all Minnesotans. Just 54% of 12 to 15-year-olds have gotten at least one vaccination shot for 16 and 17-year-olds. That figure is 59%. That's compared to 73% of adults 18 and over. Best thing you can do is get them vaccinated. Tried and true are the millions of people across the world who have been vaccinated and vaccinated safely. That's right. Chawla says the collateral damage from COVID is also hitting children hard in another way. For every 4 deaths in the United States, one child has been left without a parent or their primary caregiver, and that is a tremendous amount of grief that children are going through every day. That's true. There's another factor contributing to the serious health concerns for kids in case of terrible timing. RSV, dangerous respiratory virus, is also surging right now. RSV, respiratory virus, normally peaks in the wintertime. We're seeing that peak right now in top kids presenting other respiratory illnesses like COVID as well. Experts say COVID, if for children under 12, could be a vaccine for the children under 12 could be available in a matter of weeks. So hopefully that is the case. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Once again, the breaking news from earlier in the show we talked about last hour, I'll talk about a little bit again here. The undercover officers who fatally shot Winston Boogie Smith atop the uptown Minneapolis parking ramp last summer will not face criminal charges. as the Crow Wing County attorney, guy from Brainerd, who was for some reason given this case, said Smith threw a handgun on them and fired. But once again, we have no video proof, no nothing. We have no evidence that says that's exactly what happened. What we have is, you know, their story versus his story. But once again, there's still so many damn questions about why the U.S. Marshals were up there on top of that parking ramp in the first place, trying to track a guy down who apparently wasn't even their target at the beginning of the day, which is not what the U.S. Marshals Service usually does. And also, once again, and let me repeat something I said a lot this summer. How in the hell, I don't care what law enforcement you are, I don't care what your jurisdiction is, I don't care if you're federal or state, it's the city of freaking Minneapolis. How in the hell are you not going on out with body cams on? How are you not doing that? Now, well, I guess after the Stallings case, maybe we're finding out why. Because apparently police officers, even when they're being recorded, can't stop themselves from being complete and total jackasses at times. Just go look at the videos from the Stallings case. But that should be a law. That should be basically everyone should be forced to have a body cam on, and for some damn reason, these marshals, well, the federal government doesn't do that. It's Minneapolis, you idiot. How do you not? But once again, and the narrative is that you hear there is, well, police officers never do anything wrong, and the perpetrators are always, they're always the guilty party, and that seems to be the case. And it's only in the rare cases of like Stallings where you have Stallings takes it to court and basically they have to release the body cam footage and show, oh yeah, he was completely innocent of all the charges you said. As a matter of fact, all the charges you said are made up at best. There's another case that actually makes me raise an eyebrow a little bit. This was brought to my attention by Dr. Scott Jensen, of course, the witch doctor. Which kind of doctor are we going to get this week? Is he one that actually embraces medicine? Like, I don't know, the CDC, the American Medical Association, the Journal of American Medicine. We don't know. Or is it going to be the guy that says, hey, maybe we should try the horse dewormer. I don't know. Which doctor will we see? It's the witch doctor, Scott Jensen. Jensen posted this video clip and said, you know, this is why you need to support police officers. This is why you need to, you know, we cannot be defunding officers, all these things. I actually think it backfired on him because the more I look at this makes me wonder how in the hell more wasn't done. Now, if you missed the tragic story, the shooting at the St. Paul bar where 15 people were shot, one person was killed. In a shootout in the bar. There's obviously a lot of, you know, the latest in gun violence in the city, the latest in gun violence in this country. And, you know, they have three people that have been, I believe, have arrested. I don't know what they've been charged with yet. But I want to read this story. Approximately 24 hours before multiple shooters exchanged gunfire in a crowded St. Paul bar, a sheriff broadcasting live on social media ominously predicted that the specific area was due for a violent incident. Ramsey County Sheriff Bob Fletcher was streaming live on patrol on Facebook and YouTube, which typically has 5,000 to 10,000 people watching it at any time. Really? Okay. When he and crime analyst Pat Scott pulled up to 7th Street Truck Park around bar close on Saturday morning. Outside the bar was a packed sidewalk where the truck park entrance immediately catching the attention of Fletcher and Scott. That's when Fletcher ominously predicted that the bar scene in downtown St. Paul was due for a shooting. We've never had any shots fired here. I hope we never do. But with this volume, at some point it's going to happen, right? It's become a very popular place, said Fletcher. The duo continued to talk while sitting there in the squad car outside the bar. I think it's good we're here, don't you think, said Fletcher. Yep, especially if there's the atmosphere, Scott said. What's the atmosphere mean? Scott added that this is as many people as I've seen here. The next night, 7th Street Truck Park was the scene of the mass shooting that left a woman in her 40s dead, 14 others suffering gunshot wounds. The woman who died was identified Monday morning as 27-year-old Marquisha D. Wiley of St. Paul. Police said multiple shooters opened fire at about 12:15 a.m. on Sunday morning, followed by multiple 911 calls from those inside who frantically begging for help. Officers arrived to find a chaotic scene. 15 people had been wounded in the shootout. Three of the people transported for care had been arrested in connection to the shootout, with St. Paul Police Chief Todd Axtell saying the three men, ages 29, 32, and 33, are currently in the hospital being treated for injuries. Charges have not been filed against the three men, so it's unclear what role they may have had in the shootout. And they have not been identified because charges have not been filed. Okay. So, we're supposed to look at this and say, see? God, Matt, if you don't respect the police, look what he was saying just the day before. He predicted it. He called it. There's going to be a shooting. Shooting soon. Well, then why didn't he do anything to try to stop it? I mean, I'm not saying he could have stopped it, but he is the Ramsey County Sheriff. He could have posted a sheriff's deputy down there and maybe deterred the shooters from acting. Did he contact the St. Paul Police Department? Did he ask the St. Paul Police Department? Or say, hey, I've got some real concerns about the truck park. You guys need to get some people in there and kind of, you know, patrolling down there and be ready to go. Because I'm pretty sure he didn't do that. Neither one of those things happened. Instead, we are treated to his Friday night drive around the city talking about things which, you know, great. I'm glad 5,000 to 10,000 people are watching. I'm going to guess most of them are not in Ramsey County. Some might be for sure, but I'm going to guess most are there. But I'm going to also guess that's not really police work. You doing a running commentary like your Mystery Science Theater 3000 on wheels as you run through St. Paul or Minneapolis for that matter, talking about, well, there's going to be a shooting there. That's not police work. Now, police work would say, oh, I think there's going to be a shooting there. I need to get a sheriff's deputy out there tomorrow night. If that would have happened, I wouldn't be talking about this in a more questioning way. I'd be saying, well, you know, and well, would we even be talking about it if there was a sheriff's deputy there right outside the door? Or a St. Paul Police Department, a squad out there. Would we be talking about this? Maybe not. This, in my mind, is not good police work because the crime happened. Just because, I mean, as a matter of fact, if anything, aren't we looking at a relatively large amount of indifference? Oh, yeah, there's going to be a shooting over here. Hey, let's go down the street. Let's see if that drive-thru is still open. I mean, it just, that'd be like me driving a car, and I am not a county sheriff. I don't have the ability to go on out there and say, we need to get some people over there. He does. And if he identified the place as a potential place where a shooting could happen a day beforehand and didn't do anything to try to get people out there to try to stop it, well, that's not good police work at all. So do not put this out there as some sort of justification saying, see, this is why we have to fund the cops even more. What? So that they can do more YouTube videos and talk about where potential crimes could happen so that no one does anything and the crime happens anyway? Because you know what? That really seems to suck. And it doesn't seem like it's going to do anything to keep the public safe at all. In my mind, I'm more questioning, why didn't you? If you had the foresight to see this, where was the Hennepin County Sheriff, the Ramsey County Sheriff's Deputy? Where was the Sheriff's Deputy out there? Where were the St. Paul cops? Did you call the St. Paul Police Department at all? Did you say, hey, this place seems to have the atmosphere for a shooting to happen? This is marginal police work at best. But in my mind, it's a massive failure. Maybe instead of us paying this guy to drive around St. Paul to do YouTube videos, maybe we should be paying this guy to say, oh, I don't know, if he thinks there's going to be a shooting at a bar, having a deputy out there to potentially stop the shooting from happening. Or if the shooting starts, being able to react in a manner to where they actually can stop it before 14 people are shot and one additional person is dead. That's just me. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. An update of evictions might be starting to happen more often here. I'll get to that here in a second. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. The St. Paul police dropped the ball. I'll backtrack that on Fletcher in a heartbeat. I'll walk that back. If I find out he had actually ordered a deputy to be out there, only he was going to be out there a little bit later on. Okay, fine. I'll give him kudos. But right now, what I see is a guy that was pointing out where a crime was going to happen, which he predicted correctly, and didn't seem to tell anyone outside of his YouTube stream. Boy, that's a dangerous area. Anyway, let's go over this way. Because if you really thought something bad was going to happen, I would hope that if you're the Ramsey County Sheriff, you would have contacted someone or sent one of your own deputies out there to try to stop it. But it doesn't seem like that was the case. Another wave of Minnesotans who are behind on their rent could face evictions this week. Starting Tuesday, property owners can end leases for any legal reason and file to evict tenants who are behind on their rent but haven't applied for the state's rent assistance program. Landlords are required to give 15-day notice. Evictions destabilize families and have financial repercussions and make it difficult to rent in the future. Landlords, meanwhile, argued this summer that the ongoing protections were putting them in a tough spot, especially when it came to evicting problematic tenants. The change is one of the last steps in an off-ramp lawmakers created to wind down a state moratorium on evictions enacted during the pandemic. Under the law, tenants with pending rental assistance applications cannot be evicted for non-payment until June 1st, 2022, when all protections are lifted. The slow distribution of the $672 million in federal rental assistance funds is frustrating renters and landlords alike. As of October 7th, the state had sent payments for about 30% of the roughly 49,000 applications for assistance via the Rent Help Minnesota program to the tune of $120 million. In an estimated 50,000 Minnesota households, about 8% of the state renters are behind in their payments per the nonprofit PolicyLink Rent Debt Dashboard. Most are low income and about 40% are unemployed. Half have children. The vast majority, close to 90%, have not applied for assistance or are still waiting for a response. Yikes. And my guess is going to be that a good chunk of the 50% or 50,000 people are about to get eviction notices. This is what the landlords argued for. This is what the Republicans demanded. We got to be able to evict these people. There's got to be consequences. Well, we're going to see that. And I think in 15 days, you could have 50,000 families out on the streets. State housing officials say they've taken steps to speed up the process for vetting rental assistance programs. The nonprofits and the state and local leaders are stepping up efforts to help renters in need to apply for the aid. Expect eviction notices to continue to pick up as they did following earlier steps in the same phase out. Yeah, this is what, once again, Republicans demanded that these end, not for any real Christian way, but because money, 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 money. And so, they're not going to want to talk about the 50,000 people that could potentially be evicted. They're not going to want to talk about that. They're just going to sit there and, I guess look for campaign donations from the landlords they helped out on this issue. Native Roots Radio is up next. You have a wonderful rest of your day. We are back on a Tuesday. Till then, see you.